we're holding on page 94 in Ksubas, Ois Memches. We started learning yesterday, we had Rebbe Lozer saying that only the Mesim in Eretz Yisrael are going to come alive at Chiyas Mesim, and we had discussion back and forth about that, and then we said that even Rebbe Lozer would agree that, of course, Tzadikim and Chutz La'aretz are going to have Chiyas Mesim, but they're going to have Mechilos, they're going to have underground, underground tunnels through which they roll. And then the Gemara had said that isn't that wouldn't that be a tzar for them to have to roll through them? And so he said mechilas nasis lahem bakarka, that the tunnels will be made for them, but they won't have to roll through them. They'll be able to walk through them. That's how Rashi learns the distinction. I didn't mention yesterday, actually, Marsha learns the distinction somewhat differently. He says everybody would agree that they roll. The difference is whether there's going to be tzar involved or not. So now, continuing in that vein, the Gemara continues. Yaakov says to Yosef, "Unsasani mi Mitzrayim, you should pick me up from Mitzrayim, v'kvartani v'kvurosam, and you should bury me in the burial place of the previous Ovis Avraham and Yitzchak." Now, why was Yaakov insisting on that? Oma kauner dvorim begoy. So Kauna says, we talked about Kauna a few days ago, there are hidden inner matters over here. In other words, there's more here than meets the eye why Yaakov is asking for this. Yedea hoya Yaakov, now Marsha points out, Rashi on the Pasuk mentions three reasons. Aside from the reason that the Gemara is going to tell us over here about the Mechilas, there's the idea so the Mitzrim don't make him into a Getchka, and so he's not affected by the Kinnim. However, Kauna is saying the Gemara here is only focusing on the reason because of the Mechilas, because only that reason explains why Dafke he's insisting on being buried in Eretz Yisrael. If it was just a matter of to avoid that they should make him into a Getchke or the problem of Kinim, he could be buried in some other land outside Eretz Yisrael. Why Dafke Eretz Yisrael? Then we have to have this reason. So Yedeya Hoya Yaakov Avinu Shet Tzadik Gomer Hoya. Yaakov Avinu knew that he was a Tzadik Gomer, meaning, in other words, that he doesn't need the schus of Eretz Yisrael. Now, we learned about yesterday being buried in Eretz Yisrael is a schus, that's like being buried under the Mizbeach. So Yaakov knows that he doesn't need that schus. He's obviously going to have Tchias HaMesim, and he's obviously going to have all of the, all the kapara that he needs anyway. The Mesim Shebuchos Varetz Chaim, so if anyway the Mesim in Eretz Yisrael are going to come alive, Loma Hitriachas Banav, then why did he burden his children with carrying him all the way to Eretz Yisrael? And the answer is Shemelo Yuskel Mechilas, because maybe he wouldn't be Zoicha to those tunnels after all, or the Girsa in the printed Gemara, Shalai Kibel all of Tsar Mechilas. He didn't want to have to take on himself this Tsar of having to go through the Mechilas. So now, Marsha points out, obviously, then this statement of Kauna disagrees with the way Rashi had learned the previous statement that the tzaddikim will be able to walk through the mechilas, and therefore there won't be tzar. So obviously he's considering that the tzaddikim are going to have to roll through the mechilas regardless. And the only way would be. So unless they have tremendous schus, but Yaakov doesn't want to rely on that degree of schus. He wanted to be with his ancestors, yeah. But that still doesn't explain why to make his children schlep all the way just to do that. So therefore we need this, Kayotze b'davar ata omer, similar that you have later on with Yosef himself. Vayashva Yosef is b'nei Yisrael v'gomer. Yosef beswore the Jewish people, his brothers, to say that they should take him out of Mitzrayim when the time comes. Omer Rav Chanina, so Rav Chanina says in the same way, Dvorim b'goy, there's inner matters over here, there's more here than meets the eye. Yedeya hoya Yosef ba'atzmoy shetzadik gomer hoya. Again, Yosef knows on himself that he's a tzadik gomer. An interesting nuance over here that we have this expression ba'atzmoy that we didn't have by Yaakov. Iyun Yaakov points out the difference is because by Yaakov there's no reason everybody knows he was a tzaddik. By Yosef, after all, when you have the whole story of Potiphar's wife, by Yovei Habayis Alasif Malachte, when it says one day he came home to do his work and then Potiphar's wife almost got him and he had to run away, what was that Malachte? Was he was actually going to do his accounts or whatever, or did he actually have intentions of succumbing and giving in to her, and just at the last moment he saw Yaakov's appearance? So therefore the Ba'atzmoy over here is stressing that no, he knew himself that he had proper motives of there, and he did not have that motive of lasas tzrochav hu nichnas. So therefore, that's why it says ba'atzmai. Anyway, so Yosef knew that he was a tzaddik gomer, and Now, Marshall says, Nela with Yaakov, fine, like you said, you could say he wants to be buried with his ancestors. Yosef, though, is anyway not being buried with his ancestors, so why does he need to bother them to bring him, so why does he need to bother them to bring him to Eretz Yisrael? So again, the answer is why is he bothering his brothers to take him 400 parasa? Because Mitzrayim itself is 400 parasa, and Eretz Yisrael is also. And the answer is again, he might not be zoicha to those tunnels, or shalak kibul all of tzar mechilas, because he didn't want to accept on himself to have to go through those mechilas. So the same reason applies to both of them. Marsha, by the way, refers to something in the Zohar that explains a deeper level. Why is it with Yosef? Why is it with Yaakov, his actual body intact, made at Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to with Yosef, only his bones? He says, "At least in the Sas Moisai Mizeh." One thing is, I didn't look up that Zohar, but the Medrash mentions that why, I think actually the Gemara mentions elsewhere, why Yosef is called bones even in his own lifetime. He himself says, before he passes away, is because he heard his brothers calling their father Avdecha Yaakov several times, and he didn't protest.
Right away.
That's why Marshall mentions that point. Yaakov could be buried right away. Yosef had to wait many years. Fine, but nevertheless, it's not like the Eibishter couldn't have made the body be preserved, you know. Yeah.
I think the body is preserved.
Yeah, but nevertheless, by Yosef over here, we're saying it was at some place. I mean, you know, you have by Yehuda, it was even more so. The Gemara mentions in a couple of places that Yehuda's bones, they brought up the bones of all the Shvatim out of Mitzrayim, and they're buried in their respective nachlis of their Shvatim. But by Yehuda, it says in a couple of places in the Gemara that his bones were rolling around and disarticulated because of the chayrim that he had taken, the nidui that he had taken on himself in connection with the whole matter of Binyamin, and finally Moshe had to daven for him, etc., etc., yeah. What? Even though he delivered, yes. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara goes on. Speaking of this topic of the importance of being in Eretz Yisrael, so the Gemara brings that Rabba's brothers sent him the following message. First of all, they sent him this point, what they're trying to do is, now Rashi points out, Rabba, this is Rabba Bar Nachmeni, so his brothers, he lived in Pumpadissa in Bavel. A couple of his brothers had moved to Eretz Yisrael. They're trying to convince him to join them there. Told us Tanoim Mamuroyim brings, based on various, collating together various Gemaras, that Rabba was one of four brothers. There was Rab Oshia, Rab Chanina, I don't know the order of age, but Rab Oshia, Rab Chanina, Rabba, and then there was another brother named Kailil, who was the father of Abaya. So Kailil passed away young. Abaya, as we know, was a Yosin, but two of the brothers made it to Eretz Yisrael, and now they're trying to convince Rabba to join them. So they sent him, they started with this message about that, look how Yaakov was, even though Yaakov knew that he's a tzaddik gomer, nevertheless he still wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So you see, in other words, even though it's possible for a person to live out his life in Chutzlaritz and have tchias amesim, nevertheless don't be satisfied with that. Ilfa, Moshe Badvarim, and Ilfa adds that there are more things.
Leave the light on and leave it alone, you're wasting money.
Nobody's doing anything with it, it's probably just the things are. So Ilfa Moshe Fadvarim, Ilfa added that there were more details in that letter that Rabba's brothers sent to him. They continued, Maisa Be'echad Shrei Mitzar Al Isha Achas. It happened with a man from Eretz Yisrael that he was feeling very lovesick about a certain woman. He knew her from Chutz Laretz, he really wanted to marry her, Ubikesh later, and he wanted to leave Eretz Yisrael to go and marry her. Kivin Sheshama Kazos, when he heard about this, the importance of staying in Eretz Yisrael, Gilgal Ba'atzmei Ad Yom Moshe. He decided he's going to manage until he passed away. He never ended up leaving Eretz Yisrael, even though he's pining for this woman. Marsha points out the word Gilgal Ba'atzmei is related to the Gilgal Mechilas that we talked about before. He realized he doesn't want to have to go through this Gilgal Mechilas eventually, so therefore now he's going to be Gilgal Ba'atzmei. He'll manage. He'll live a day at a time and manage rather than Atzmai's bones, maybe, yeah. And they continue in this letter to Rabba, Afapi Shechocham Godel Abda, even though you are a great Tamil Chocham, Ein Adoyim Eloyim Ma'atzmai Eloyim Rabba. The fact is, you can't compare learning by yourself to learning from your Rebbe. Now, it's not as though Rabbah didn't have Rebbeim in Bavel. He learned by Rav Chista, he learned by Rav Muna, etc. Nevertheless, his brothers are telling him that there's even greater Talmid Chachamim here in Eretz Yisrael that you can learn from. V'im Toima Ein Lecha Rav, you're going to say, I don't have a Rebbe over there. Who was there of the caliber in Eretz Yisrael to be my Rebbe? So they tell him, Yesh Lecha Rav Umanu Rav Yechanan. As a matter of fact, there is Rav Yechanan. And therefore, don't be satisfied with learning by Rav Huna and so forth in Babel. Come to Eretz Yisrael to learn by Rav Yechanan. The Rambam, by the way, mentions in one place that we find based on various Gemaras at this period in history, the level of, because of Rav Yechanan, because of the other Chachamim over there, the level of learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael was far greater than it was in Babel. Aside from the general fact that Vida Eretz Yisrael Machtim and the different things that the Gemara says all over the place about the Maila of the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, during this period that Amram explains, there were periods in Babel when there were persecutions and then wars and other such things that were distracting the Chachamim, and therefore they weren't able to learn on such a high level. There's actually a Gemara in Chulin that mentions that one time Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef, the same Rabbah that we're talking about over here, that he and Rabbi Yosef one time had to flee from the city of Pumbedissa because armies were coming, and then Rabbi Zera meets them on the road and teaches them a halacha. So now Rabbi Yosef, and so that also gives more of an insight into what Rabbah's brothers are telling him, that you'd do much better to come here to Eretz Yisrael, where things are much more tranquil and where things are where you can learn on a much higher level.
What date are you talking about in terms of reading?
We're talking about sometime in the late 3rd century, Lemanianim. Worth mentioning, by the way, in this connection, there is this little piece over here, these three words, Umanu Rabbi Yechanan, give rise to quite a bit of discussion about trying to fix, since you mentioned the dates, trying to fix the length of how Rabbah lived and what his dates are. Rav Shmuel Gaon tells us in his Igeres that Rabbah was Nifter in the year 320 Lemanianim, whatever that comes out, 4080 since creation. The Gemara mentions in a few places that we learned it most recently in Yevamos, that Rabbah lived to be 40. The problem with that is that then you don't have Rabbah, among other things, it comes out, Rabbah wouldn't really have been old enough when Rav Yochanan was alive to be learning by him. Rav Shmuel Gaon actually writes in the Igeres, he puts the year that Rav Yochanan passed away as 4039, in which case Rav Yochanan passed away even a year before Rabbah was born. But even you say maybe he meant actually 4040 something, still Rabbah would have been a young boy at the time. So the Redotus of Rishonim, an important sefer on Jewish history, has a long discussion about this and various other relevant Gemaras, and he explains that actually those Gemaras that say that Rabbah lived to be 40, it seems, he says, it actually should say that Rabbah lived to be 60. So that makes it work then. So in that case, Rabbah would have been a young man in his 20s when Rabbi Yochanan passed away, and therefore there would have been enough time for his brothers to tell him, even though you're already a younger man and you're a great Talmid Chacham, nevertheless you still have what to learn from Rabbi Yochanan. By the way, the Gemara does mention in a number of places there are statements that Rabbah says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, which may mean that he actually listened to his brothers. And there's also a Tosfos in Bava Basra based on something that it says over there in the Gemara that learns that, in fact, Rabbah did listen to what his brothers said, and Taka came and learned in Eretz Yisrael for a while and had a chance to learn by Rabbi Yochanan.
It's a difference when you say Mishmael or Mishum.
Mishum means that he's saying not directly in his name, but rather that he heard it from someone who can trace it back to Rabbi Yochanan. But sometimes you have Omer Rabbah, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, which would imply that he heard it from him directly. Anyway, the brothers continue telling Rabbah, V'im ein ata oila, even if you don't want to come up to Eretz Yisrael, he's zohar b'gimel dvarim. At least be careful with the following three things. Al tarab b'yeshiva. Don't sit too much. She yeshiva kosher l'tachtonis, because sitting too much is bad for a person. It can give him hemorrhoids. Va'al tarab b'amida. Don't spend too much time standing. She amida kosher l'lev, because too much standing is bad for your heart. Va'al tarab b'halicha. And don't do too much walking. She halicha kosher l'einayim, because too much walking is bad for your eyes. Now, why are they telling him this if you don't come to Eretz Yisrael? Be careful with these three things. So one implication is, in other words, if you come to Eretz Yisrael, then you don't have to be careful of these things, because the healthfulness of Eretz Yisrael, the avira, the Eretz Yisrael, will save you from these possible consequences. But if you're going to stay in Chutz Laaretz, even in Babel, as much as we learned yesterday, the greatness of Babel, nevertheless, they're telling him you're going to have to be considering these three things. An interesting vote that occurred, Eitz Yosef refers over here to a couple of Mephoshim, who he doesn't actually quote them, but he names them, and I looked it up. They have a couple of the Mephoshim have an interesting explanation of another meaning of what they're saying. We're going to learn in a couple of weeks, Best Hashem, in Masechta Nedarim, we're going to talk about the Pasuk from the Teuchecha, from near the end of the Teuchecha in Parshas Kisavai, that says that in Chutfar, it's during the years of Golus, it says Hashem will cause that you're going to have Lev Ragos, a trembling heart, and your eyes are going to be wasting away hoping for a better future, the davin nafesh, and a disappointment of the soul. And the Gemara specifically says, davin nafesh refers to hemorrhoids. So therefore, they're telling him these three things. If you stay in Chutz Laaretz, you have all those three things to worry about. Mashenkin, you come to Eretz Yisrael, you'll be much better off.
Besides hemorrhoids, if you sit too much, it's good for constipation.
Well, that's what they're saying over here. Okay. There is actually, the Chassam Sofer has another take on it as well. He says they're also hinting to him about the proper way that, well, first of all, the Gemara is going to go on to say that they're telling him you have to divide your time between them. So he says what they're telling him like this. Sitting represents earning a living. You don't want too much of that because then you're going to be involved with Tachtonius. You're too much involved with the Olam Hazeh Tachton and that's not good for you. You don't want too much amida, which is to just keep on reviewing what you learned again and again, but only standing still and not progressing in your learning, because that's not good for your heart, meaning for your understanding. On the other hand, you don't want to be walking too much, as in you're going to try to go too far, too fast without learning the basics, because that's not good for your eyes, meaning you're not going to have a proper viewpoint on Torah. So Ella, so they tell him, shlish ba'amida, one third of your time should be spent standing, shlish b'yeshiva, one third sitting, shlish b'hiloch, and one third walking. So balance it out. And they continue telling him, kol yeshiva she'eni masmicha, anytime you're sitting and you're not leaning on something, meaning Rashi describes, so like, for example, you're sitting on a chair, then it has a back. But you're sitting, let's say, on a bench, for example, or on a bed, there's no back. Your back is not leaning against anything. Amida noicha hemena. Then standing is better for you than that. What do you mean? Amida sakadai. What do you mean? Standing is better for you. Va'amat amida kashal alev. You just said it's bad for the heart. So why would sitting with your back unsupported be worse than that? Ella, what they rather say is, yeshiva she'en basmicha. Rather, what they're telling him is, if you're sitting without leaning back on something, amida sheyesh basmicha noicha hemena, then you're better off standing when you can lean on something. So worst of all, in other words, is to be standing without any support. Next best is to be standing on something. The worst is to sit, is to stand without support. Worse than that is to sit without support. Standing without support is a little better than that. It's still not great, but at least it's better than that. In other words, we just said, too much standing is bad for your heart, we said, so therefore, so if a person is, that's when a person is standing unsupported, where if he's standing supported, where he's able to lean against something, then that's better than sitting unsupported.
They would learn Torah standing.
They would learn Torah standing, but nevertheless, Rava's brothers are telling him that you also need to divide up your time, and it shouldn't be too much of one at the expense of the other. Even that Gemara that mentions that they learned standing, by the way, mentions in connection with Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai, Rakos Me'umad Koshis Me'yoshav. The harder topics, even Moshe on Har Sinai, would sit to learn. The easier topics, he would learn standing. Okay. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Elazar, Amei Arotzes Einem Chayim. Amei Arotz are not going to come alive by Tchias HaMesim. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Mesim Bal Yichyu, the dead will not live, Refoim Bal Yakumu. Refoim, which means like the weak ones, so it means like it's also another word for dead people, Bal Yakumu will not rise. Now, how do we know that refers to Amei Aretz? We're going to see in a second. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in Braisa. When the Pasuk says, Mesim Bal Yichyu, Yochol Lakol, maybe does that mean everybody? Does that mean nobody is getting Tchias HaMesim? No, Tamar Lomer, Refoyim Bal Yakumu. When the Pasuk continues about the Refoyim will not get up, that means, B'merapa Atzim Medivrei Torah Kosta Medaber. The Pasuk is referring to somebody who weakens himself, who slacks himself off from having a connection with Divrei Torah. So therefore we see it's referring to the Amei Aretz. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Elazar, lo nicha l'marayu da'amret l'hu hachi. Their master, Hashem, does not appreciate that you're talking about them like that. Never talk badly about Yidden like that. You're going to say the Amei Aretz have no hope and they have no tchias HaMesim. What? Yeah, they have a Gemara in Sanhedrin. You have a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Where Rabbi Yochanan says that about a couple of statements, a couple of places in a couple of places. I don't think we've had it before in this year, and like what we did in Sanhedrin when we did it a few years back. But Rabbi Yochanan, that's Rabbi Yochanan's expression. That you're going to talk. Yeah, you're going to talk negatively against the Jewish people like that. Don't talk like that. Rather, the refoim of the pasuk are people who not just they don't learn Torah. These are people who abandon and who abandon Torah altogether and are worshiping Avodah Zarah. Which means, in other words, Maharsha says, now Rabbi Yochanan, being an Amora, can't argue with a Braisa, but he explains that when the Braisa said, "Bimirata asmi b'divrei Torah," means that he's going the whole 9 yards. He's abandoned divrei Torah and gone and to the other extreme to divrei Torah. But in other words, not Sam and Amoretz, who, while he may not be learning Torah, is not involved with Avodah Zarah either. So the Amei Oretz do have a way out. Rabbi Elazar says, I hear what you're saying, but nevertheless, Mikra Acha Ani Dordash. And there is another pasuk that I darshan to say, it's Yosef teaches out a little more over here. If it only said Mason Bal Yichu, you would say it means the Goyish and Mason, because obviously we know Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelik Lelem Abba, and everybody's having space for Mason. But now that it says Refoim Bal Yakumu, then we have to understand it means people who are weak in a certain area, so I'm saying that it means Divrei Torah, as the Braisa says. Rabbi Yochanan is answering that no, after all, the pasuk says, we quoted yesterday, the pasuk, Yichyu Meisecha, it's a few psukim away from this one, your dead will live, so we see clearly that means all the Jewish people. So therefore, the Refoyim Bal, the Mason Bal Yichyu must refer to the Goyim. But then Rabbi Lazar is saying, fine, but the fact is, there is another pasuk, Dichtiv, because that same pasuk, Mason Bal Yichyu, continues, it's part of the pasuk Yichyu Meisecha. We quoted yesterday the pasuk Yichyu Meisecha Nevelosi Yikumun. Your dead will live. My Nevelos, my dead bodies will come alive again. Will rise up. Now the pasuk continues that same pasuk in Yeshaya continues Hakitzu Veranu Roshech Neofer. That's where we get the famous expression from. The pasuk continues Ki Tal Ores Talecha, because your dew is a dew of light. Va'oretz Refoyim Tapil, and you will throw down the Refoyim onto the ground. Now again we have this word Refoyim that we had from the other pasuk. So that means, so Rabbi Lazar explains, the word Oros in the Pasuk means light, as in the light of Torah. Pashuk Pshat Mephoshim on the Pasuk explain, it means something like herbs and vegetables. It means a dew, like dew that revives vegetation, the same way the dew will revive the mason. But Rabbi Lazar is taking Oros in the sense of light. So he's saying, Kolam Ishtamish Ba'ur Torah, anybody who uses the light of Torah, who learns Torah, then that light of Torah will bring them alive again. But anybody who is not using the light of Torah, and I'm a Oretz, ain't O Torah Machayehu. The light of Torah is not going to revive him. So therefore, Rabbi Lazar says, I hear what you're saying, that you don't want to put down a whole groups of Jews. But the fact is, how are we going to understand that pasuk? Tal Oretz Talecha. Maharsha points out, in fact, we have other places where the Torah is taka compared to dew. Dew is always a bracha. There's always dew for bracha, and the same way the Torah is constantly a bracha. So Rabbi Lazar says, do we have a choice but to learn that way? But given the chazir, the comet star, but he saw that Rabbi Yochanan was still having sar from this. After all, I hear what you're saying, Rabbi Lazar, but the fact is, do we want to really write off whole segments of the Jewish people like this just because they're Amei Oretz? Omalei, so Rabbi Lazar says, Rebbe Matsasi Lehem Refuor Takonim in Atorah. You know what? I found a source in Torah that there is a Refuor for them. So in other words, Eitz Yosef says that because he realized Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yochanan is having sefsar, therefore Hashem enlightened his eyes and made it possible for him to realize a new pshat in a pasuk. Namely, the pasuk says, "Va'atim advekim b'Hashem alekechem." You who are attached to Hashem your God, chayim kolchem ayoyim. All of you are alive today. Now, what does this mean? Advekim b'Hashem alekechem. V'chi efshel l'ibuk l'dabuki b'shchina. How can you actually connect? How can you actually be joined to the shchina? V'aksiv ki Hashem alekecha eish oichlohu. Doesn't it say that Hashem is like a consuming fire? Ella, kol amasi bita the Talmud Chacham, but rather it means that a person who marries off his daughter to a Talmud Chacham, va oisa prakmati the Talmud Chacham, and he does business for Talmud Chacham, which means Rashi says the Talmud Chacham may have money that he wants to invest, and he needs somebody to manage the investment and manage the business for him. This kind of thing is called an iska in halacha. The whole concept of a heter iska is basically that, is you're transforming a loan into a business partnership. So often you have, then you'll have something like that. You'll have an investing partner and you'll have a managing partner. So oisa prakmata the Talmid Chachamim means somebody who does that on behalf of Talmid Chachamim, that he invests and manages their money for them. And a person who gives Talmid Chachamim to benefit from his property. Mala, all of our kosev, kila b'davik b'shchina. Then the pasuk considers it as though he's joined to the shchina. And therefore, so there is a takana for him after all. He himself may not have urtura, but he's acting in this way. And he's connecting to the Talmud Chacham, and the Talmud Chacham himself is somewhat akin to the shchina. Es Hashem alekechatira, l'rabbis Talmud Chachamim. So the result of that is he does in fact have a connection to Hashem, and therefore Chayim Kul Chamayim, therefore he can come alive by Tchias Amesim. Why these three things? Marsha points out that these are three ways in three primary things in a person's life, and he's connecting to the Talmud Chacham in all three of them. He marries off his daughter to a Talmud Chacham, therefore he has a physical connection with them. He gives them hanah from his nechosim, that he has a financial connection with them, and the oisek prakmatia, the Talmud Chachamim, is that it's a sichliyistik thing, that he's using his seichel to manage the Talmud Chacham's money wisely and to help him in whatever way possible. The Rambam, in fact, counts this as one of the 613 mitzvahs. This mitzvah of voy sidbach, the Rambam listed as one of the mitzvahs that you have to try to be close to Talmud Chachamim in whatever way is possible. There is an interesting vort on it also that they say if he marries off his daughter to a Talmud Chacham, that might mean that he's doing it to be close to the Talmud Chacham. On the other hand, it might just be because he wants to pride himself. Look what a good catch I had. But maybe he's not being mahana the son-in-law then from his nechosim. On the other hand, if he's only being mahana him, you could say, so maybe he's saying, you know what, I'll keep him at a distance. I don't want him to be so close to me. When he does both, then you know that he's doing it tactical because he wants to be close to Talmud Chacham and he appreciates them and wants to have as much of a connection with them as possible, and then we're saying he has that connection to the Eibishter through that. So what we're saying, Osi Prakmat the Talmud Chacham was saying is that he's the money manager for the Talmud Chacham. The Talmud Chacham gives him money, and this guy invests it and manages. Whether, for example, it might be a business. So he, for example, uses the money to open a store and then generate profits for that the Talmud Chacham will get from, and similar.
Except for losses or not?
I mean, there's a whole concept of a heter iska, for example. You have an iska itself. There's complications in halacha. It has to be structured in a way to avoid issues of ribis, because technically the money of the iska is considered half pikod and half milva, and you have to be careful of issues of ribis with the half that's milva. There's a substantial part of Masechta Bava Metzia in the fifth parak that deals with some of those dinim, and then you have in Shulchan Aruch you have quite a lot of detail about it. But yeah, I mean, so there can be losses, of course, but as a responsible managing partner, you're trying to minimize them, yeah. To a certain extent, they both have to absorb it, but that's, yeah. So that's how, in other words, it's also possible, actually, even Rabbi Lozer, who's saying that the Amir Oretz are not going to come alive by Tchias Amesim, he may not. Now there is some discussion about this. I mean, what does he do with the Mishnah? Kol Yisrael Yeshev Chelik Olam Haba. So one answer is he might say that the Amir Oretz, fine, their neshamas will come alive, but not necessarily in the original gufim that they were in. But with that said, though, there are Rishonim who learn that maybe, in fact, look, you know, we can't say like Rabbi Lozer in the end because of that Mishnah in Sanhedrin. On the other hand, so we'd have to say that maybe that Mishnah, that we'd have to say that, I mean, that Mishnah says there are certain people who don't get a chelik al mabah, the people who are kofer b'tchias amesim or whatever, so we might have to say Rabbi Lozer is referring to such types. On the other hand, there was a Tosfos elsewhere that implies that, yeah, Amei Aretz are not necessarily going to have Tchias Amesim, like Rabbi Lozer is saying over here, unless they have a connection with the Torah through the Talmud Chachamim. The Gemara continues, Kayotze B'Dover HaTorimer, in a similar vein, you have another Another pasuk that talks about the same kind of thing. The pasuk says, "Avo as Hashem alekecha." You have to love Hashem uladav gabay and to connect with Him. So the same question: He actually adam ladavik b'shchina. How can a person connect with the Shechina? Elo, the same thing. Kol amasi biter l'tamen chacham. A person marries off his daughter to a tamen chacham. Va'osa prakmata l'tamen chacham, and he does business on behalf of a tamen chacham to generate profits for him. Va'mahana tamen chacham menachasav, and he causes tamen chacham to benefit from his property. Malol v'kosev kilim adavik b'shchina. Same thing. The pasuk counts it as though he connected with the shchina. So the same thing we learn from another pasuk as well. In fact, Yun Yaakov mentions that there's a medrash that says that, you know, the same way we have a halacha on Shabbos, if a fire breaks out, we talked about this some time ago, that if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, you can save Kisrei HaKodesh from it, you can bend the rules of Shabbos a little bit to save Kisrei HaKodesh and carry it out to a chotzer that doesn't have a proper Erev or whatever, and you also save the Tik HaSefer, you save the case that the Sefer is in, together with the Sefer itself, even though it doesn't have the same level of Kedusha, but it's protecting the case, therefore it partakes to a certain extent of that level of Kedusha. In the same way, the Am Ha'aretz over here was saying, who is helping the Talmid Chacham in whatever way possible, he ends up being like the Tik HaSefer, and therefore he gets saved along with him. Elsewhere in the Gemara, in fact, the Gemara gives a different metaphor for that kind of thing. The Gemara compares in Chulin the Jewish people to a vine. In a vine, the main thing you get out of it is the grapes, which are like the Talmid Chachamim. Nevertheless, it still has leaves, and the leaves are very important as well. They shield the grapes from getting burnt by the sun. In the same way, the Amei Ha'aretz shield and help protect the Talmid Chachamim. The Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Chiya b'Rabbi Yosef, Asidin tzaddikim shemevatz betzin va'olam b'Yerushalayim. The tzaddikim are going to sprout forth from the ground in Yerushalayim. Meaning, we said before, there's going to be the tunnels that bring them to Eretz Yisrael. Now, where are they going to pop out of the ground? In Yerushalayim. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, V'yatzitzu me'ir ke'esev ha'aretz. As the Pasuk says, they will sprout forth from the city like the grass of the earth. Meaning, in the simple sense, Maharsha says it means, in other words, that's referring to the tremendous fertility that Eretz Yisrael will have, La'asad Lovin, which is actually going to be the next piece of Gemara, is going to douse in that half of the pasuk. So therefore, so it would mean that it's going to grow by itself without you having to plant it. But here, for the purposes of this Jerusha, since the first half of the pasuk is in the singular, Yehi Fisas Bar Ba'aretz, we would expect the rest of it is in the singular as well, and therefore the Yatzitzu in plural is unexpected, therefore we darshan differently that it's referring to the tzaddikim popping out of the ground. What do we mean by the city? The word ir in this context means specifically Yerushalayim. Shenema v'ganoisi ala ir azois, as Hashem says in the times of Sancheirev, that I'm going to protect this city. So it means, in other words, that everybody else, all Maharsha explains, relative to Yerushalayim, everything else, even the biggest cities, are considered only villages relative to Yerushalayim. We learned the other day, we had the expression, Bnois Yerushalayim in Shir HaShirim, a number of times, which literally means the daughters of Yerushalayim. Bnois in Tanakh, often Bnois means the villages that are dependent on a big city. You'd have the big city where people live, and then you have the farming villages nearby where people have their farms and things, and they depend on the city for various things. So they're like dependencies of it. They're the daughters. So in the same way, all other cities are like dependencies relative to Yerushalayim. So therefore, we're saying over here, the ear itself is Yerushalayim and everything else is secondary to it. So it's going to mean, so the tzaddikim are going to come out in Yerushalayim, meaning Maharsha brings over here from Rashi in Sanhedrin, that says that it means even, we said before, about the Mechilas, that they're going to terminate in Yerushalayim, and that's where the tzaddikim are going to come out of the ground by Tchias HaMesim. When the tzaddikim come alive by Tchias HaMesim, they're going to come in their clothing. Now Tosfos actually discusses what clothing do we mean. Do we mean the clothing that they were buried in, the Tachrichim, or do we mean the clothing that they wore during their lifetimes? Tosfos brings from a Yerushalmi in the previous Perek, where when we had here in the Bavli the whole story of Rebbe's Ptira, so the Yerushalmi there gives other details about Rebbe's Ptira, and one of them is he tells them don't spend too much on the Tachrichim, because I'm not going to come back with them, I'm going to come back with the clothing that I wore while I was alive. This, by the way, has implications in halacha because you have the question, can you make tachrifim out of shatnez, for example? Now, the Gemara elsewhere points out you have the concept mitzvahs betelus lasid lavoi. So therefore, lasid lavoi, there may not be an issue anyway. They'd be allowed to wear shatnez, but another consideration is they may not necessarily come alive in their tachrifim anyhow, so it would be a moot point. Another point, actually, Eitz Yosef points out over here another meaning of Bilvur Shehen can mean in the guf, because the guf, after all, is a garment for the neshama. So the point would be, in other words, don't think that Tchiasa Mason is only a purely spiritual thing. No, there's going to be actual neshamas that are going to come alive in actual physical, the same physical bodies that they lived in. You shouldn't think it's just going to be like a new kind of body or something. The Rambam and the Ramban argue whether Tchias HaMesim is the end goal of the whole thing. The Rambam learns it's not. Tchias HaMesim is a reward for the tzaddikim, but eventually the Rambam learns everybody's going to pass away, and there's going to be a world of only neshamas. The Ramban disagrees, and Shaar HaGmul disagrees, and the Alter Rebbe in the Kotei Torah agrees with the Ramban that there's going to be forevermore, there's going to be neshamas in bodies. They're going to be more refined by the bodies themselves are going to be refined and become to a much higher level than they are now, which is why they're not going to need gashmias to food and drink, but nevertheless, there are going to be bodies.
Everybody's gone through so many gilguli by then. How do you know which kufa is the only one is going to be?
So the short answer is, it's brought in chassidus, that in each gilgul, a person was, hopefully, misakin, one part of that neshama. That part of that neshama will go into that guf. After all, a neshama is a ruchniyistika thing. It can be infinitely divided into sub-neshamas. Each one contains within it all the esospheres and all that. So therefore, each aspect of the neshama will go into the guf that was misak in that part of the neshama. So Rabbi Yehuda Yosef is saying that they're going to come alive in their clothes. He says, kavachomer mechita. A kavachomer from wheat. Ma chita shenikbara aruma. A grain of wheat is buried in the ground naked. You don't bury it with the very, you don't plant it with the various shells and whatnot that it has when it grows on the stalk. Yotze b'kama mabushin. When it grows, it has several layers of shells and things on it. Tzadikim shenikbara bilu b'shem. Alachas kama b'kama. How much more so than tzadikim who are buried in their clothing, that they're going to come alive with that clothing. Again, whether we mean the tachrifim, whether we mean the clothing that they wore while they were alive, or whether we mean their actual physical guf. Elsewhere, by the way, Tosfos points out that a grain of wheat, actually we find other Gemaras that imply that a grain of wheat is taken out to be buried with some of its covering. It's not completely naked. Nevertheless, though, compared to, you have several layers. You have the bran, and on top of it you have the straw, and you have whatever. So compared to that, comparatively, it's naked relative to that. It's true that often grains of wheat are taken out to be planted. They do have their inner shell, the shell, the bran or whatever it is still attached to them. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Festatus.
You said with Marathi, but from different support, that sounds like he's doing something active as opposed to avoiding being mechazik himself.
Well, that's what it means, basically. In other words, a person is merap after the divrei Torah. It means he had an opportunity to learn Torah, and he's forfeiting that opportunity. Worth mentioning in that connection, something from Tanad Ve'eliyahu. I may have mentioned it before in the Shiva video when we talked about Tanad Ve'eliyahu a few days ago in connection with Rav Onan, where it tells a story of Ve'eliyahu and Avi once in one time meets up with a fisherman, Anama Oretz, and he asks him, why don't you learn Torah? And the guy says, I don't have the head for it. So then Eliyahu starts asking him about what he does, how he does his fishing, and the guy explains you have to know the currents, and you have to know the proper types of traps for different fish, and he's going on, and Eliyahu tells him, listen, for that you have the head, and for Torah you don't have the head. So that's what I'm saying, that a person can be merata asim v'divrei Torah. He has the ability, but he doesn't put in the effort. So we're saying, so Rabbi Elazar was originally saying, that that's a problem, and such a person may not come alive, may not have the schus to come alive, but then he says, Abi, he should at least be connecting with the Tamar Chachamim, and that way he connects with the Eberstein and will be Chaim Kol Chamayon. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Chogola. We have like this, so when it comes to Stoim, why was Sdoim completely obliterated? So in Chassidus, it explains that the way they act in Sdoim, with a total lack of Shul, a total opposite of Sholem and Achdus, is like Olam HaToyu. Now, that's what Olam HaToyu is. Every one of the Sfidus in there is individualistic, and it wants nothing to do with the other ones, and each one is clashing with the other ones, and therefore, that's Olam HaToyu, and the whole thing breaks apart. So in the same way, Sdoim and Amor, getting destroyed, is like Shvidas HaKelim of Olam HaToyu. But after all, the whole purpose was Soysdom and Nasalitnos, the whole purpose of the destruction of Olam HaTohu was that the Olam HaTikun is built on its ruins, and Olam HaTikun is where we put everything back together, and you have a scalalos, all the spirits are harmoniously together, and our job is to make the world the same way. In the same vein, the Medrash says, when it says, Maksosi David Abdi, actually we had this in Yevamos not so long ago, that when it says, Maksosi David Abdi, Hashem says, I found my servant David, where did I find him? The Gemara says, in Sdoim. So what does it mean? How does David Malka Mashiach come specifically from Sdoim? So that means deep down, Sdoim has that advantage that that's where you have. After all, there's the revelation of the lights of Tohu. We're saying Sdoim represents Olam HaTohu, so therefore, so you have, there is a great thing, of, after all, the intense lights of Tohu. So therefore, so Dafka, David HaMelech, David Malka Mashiach has its roots in Sdoim, because that is what David is all about, is to reveal the Odus to Tohu, which are infinitely great, but to bring them down into the Kalim the Tikkun. This is the Rebbe talked over and over about the idea of Odus the Tohu, the intensity of Tohu, but Kalim the Tikkun in the proper Kalim that actually has an effect on the world rather than overpowering it. Okay, continuing with halachas of Shabbos, with halachas of Amir al-Akum. So here's an example. Sometimes you have where a goy can be doing something on Shabbos, and you're gonna have a benefit from it later on. So some such things are mutter. So an example he gives over here is a goy is making cheese, and you watch the milking and you watch the cheese making. So it'll be chol of Yisrael. That will be fine, even though the goy is making it and intending to sell it to you, because after all, it's still his at that point, and he's doing it the toivas atzmai. So you'd even be allowed to tell him to do it on Shabbos because you're telling him at that point it's still the goy's, and a goy is allowed to do his own melacha on Shabbos. Now, on the other hand, for example, let's say he bought something from you and he wants to pick up the merchandise on Shabbos, you should try to tell him not to if possible. A practical outcome from that also is sometimes, for example, you have a goyish cleaning lady on Shabbos, and she needs to be paid. You need to pay her before Shabbos. To leave the money for her and for her to take it herself is actually pretty questionable halacha. So better make sure she has the money before Shabbos, or arrange to give it to her after Shabbos, rather than, for example, you're just going to tell her, here it is in my wallet, take it out or whatever. That's problematic halacha.
So it's always better that way, you pay for.
Well, there is that, of course, but nonetheless, yeah, you can't necessarily have her take it on Shabbos itself. And then you have another din, is suppose you have a yortzeit on Shabbos, and you forgot to light a yortzeit candle, you're allowed to tell a goy to light it bein hashmoshes. In a similar vein, by the way, actually, if you forgot to light Shabbos candles, also, you're allowed to have a goy light bein hashmoshes. And by the way, in that case, what you do is, you don't make the bracha, lahadik ner shol Shabbos, you say, al hadlokas ner Shabbos. Because you didn't light the candle yourself, but only Bein HaShemoshes, because Bein HaShemoshes, why do we have to keep Shabbos Bein HaShemoshes between Shkia and Seis? Because you don't know yet for sure whether that belongs to Friday or belongs to Shabbos. Only Hashem himself knows that, as we know, by Chal Elikim, by Yom HaShvi, Hashem went until the deadline, because he knows the exact moment. So for us, but nevertheless, it's really only an Issur D'Rabbanan at that point, and therefore at that point we're allowed to tell a goy to do a malacha for these kinds of necessities. I don't know whether he gets half the mitzvah, but that's another question.